Do we have industry in Alaska? Clearly, the mainstays of our economy are fossil fuel extraction, fishing, mining, our military presence, and tourism. What about manufacturing? What other industries do we have? Good morning and welcome to Talk of Alaska. I'm Steve Heimel. What industries can we have? With broadband, we can have an imagination industry, can't we? Our number, 1-800-478-8255, 478-TALK, local call in Anchorage, 550-8422, email talk at alaskapublic.org. Our Alaskan industries on Talk of Alaska statewide.
Today's program is underwritten in part by Alaska Business Monthly Magazine, providing insight on statewide business and government issues. There's more information online at akbizmag.com. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters.
Well, we started a series of shows called AK at 100, Alaska at 100, trying to look ahead to the future of the state. And our first show in that series just ran a few weeks ago, and it was just kind of mind-blowing. It was totally not what I thought. The ideas and thoughts that came out were just very different. And one thing that was brought up right away and agreed to by everyone on the show, which is very unusual, is that we don't have any manufacturing in Alaska. And so that we don't really have an industrial base. And this is a commonplace, an economic commonplace that everyone knows. But the question is, could we? And I've had a number of callers and people that have gotten in touch through email since that program and said, hey, wait a minute, we do have this, we do have that, and we do indeed. So, we have, as we discussed on that show, we have a pretty large bakery in Anchorage. It's a Sunshine Bakery. I think it even makes Twinkies. And we have a rather huge medical complex in certainly in Anchorage and some other places as well, but especially in Anchorage. And we still have a little remnant of our dairy industry left. And that brings us to Phil Schneider, who is the founder of a company called True North Plastics. And he joins us from the factory in Palmer. Phil, welcome to Talk of Alaska.
Thank you.
So tell me about your what you do at True North Plastics.
Well, we're a manufacturer of recyclable high-density polyethylene jugs. And for everybody who shops in local grocery stores, we make the yellow jugs for the creamery out here, local dairy, as you said, also Northern Lights Dairy. And then we also support a local water business and a number of local water businesses here in the Valley and in Alaska. And then finally, we have a product that you can put industrial cleaners and windshield wiper fluid into. And that's in what we call an industrial round. They're all gallon jugs. We can make a half-gallon jug, and we can do some specialty plastics if necessary. But our main products are our gallon water and milk and a one-gallon industrial round recyclable plastic jug.
In order to do this, you had to purchase machinery, I would assume.
Yeah, and you know, there've been. I'm a new owner. I've got a partner also in the business. We've been growing and developing the business. New True North is a new name for us, and because we have new products and new ownership. But yeah, there's the original. Some of the original equipment in here was owned at one time by Matt Made, and some of it was shipped in from outside, but the machines are anywhere between, 40 and 50 years old, and a variety of equipment that we have in here varies in age. But yeah, most of it has to be shipped in. In fact, just about all of it is shipped in great distances, and in that case, pretty good cost.
Yeah. But, would you call this a growth area? I mean, you made this investment. Mm-hmm. I would assume that this is kind of a paying business. I mean, you actually can employ people and such like that.
Yeah. But this I'd like to tell you we're doing it all for fun, but yeah, I mean, we're trying to create jobs in the community. We're trying to support the local dairy and support the water businesses. Yep.
And you yourself, this is not, you didn't just suddenly say, I'm going to open a bottle factory.
No, it was brought to me as an opportunity and an investment and you know, just like anybody who is in business, I think if you enjoy it and you love it, you know, it becomes profitable and prosperous for you. And so I grew up in the Midwest, and I worked making toilet seats, and I had different friends that worked in different factories, and some of those friends went on to own manufacturing plants back there. Of course, it's a bit easier in the Midwest to run a manufacturing business than up here. At least there's some different challenges, I'll say. So it's something that interested me. And, you know, again, I come back to, I like the idea of buying locally, and I like the idea of supporting local businesses. I like the idea of all made in Alaska products. And so that also appealed to me.
Yeah. You know, I think many people in Alaska would just as soon, if they could, support the local economy. I think even to the point of paying a premium, in many cases, people are willing to do that if they know that money is going to circulate around locally a little bit more and feed the local economy.
Yeah, and I mean, do you want a gallon of milk that's sloshed around in a container ship for 5 days and sat on a shipping dock, or do you want something that came out of a cow in Palmer yesterday?
Right.
Water's the same way.
Yeah, the crazy thing about that milk is that they sterilize it to the point where it doesn't even need refrigeration, but they still sell it refrigerated because they thought it's bad marketing not to.
Right. So we do want to try to support those local farmers and our local dairies for sure.
Yeah.
But yeah, as far as growth goes, you know, I have to say, I think I think there's potential. We have a lot of fresh water here, and I think just speaking for our business, I think there's potential to, you know, we all shop at these box stores, and you know, if you take a look on the shelves, the jug water you buy a lot of times, the jug window wash you buy, and a lot of times, like we talk about the milk, it gets shipped up for 5 days, and you know, the carbon footprint involved with that, the environmental aspect of that, the financial aspect of that. By the same token, you pointed out it's hard to make a product here that can be as cost sensitive or competitive, rather cost competitive with some of these box stores, and they're shipping up in bulk and flat rate and so on and so forth. So, you know, it's a tough thing for people who want to get into manufacturing in the state to kind of look at. And again, just speaking for us, I just, you know, I always encourage our local box stores to try to carry local products. And that's where the growth, I think, is. If we can get back to buying locally and thinking globally about our environment, I think we could have some growth in this business that I've invested in, yeah.
Well, we're talking with Phil Schneider. He's founder of True North Plastics, which is makes plastic bottles out there in Palmer. And Phil, one of the reasons I wanted to have you on is because you were so eloquent about when you started singing the blues about the differential challenges that a manufacturer has being in Alaska. It just, like, man, you were eloquent. And but before we get going on all that, I want to go to our second guest, Dr. Lynn Freeman, founder of Envision Behavioral Medicine Intervention. Boy, Dr. Freeman, that says a lot. Now, when they say doctor, this is in the field of medicine, but it's actually your doctorate is in
psychology, with a specialty in mind body. And essentially, this is what you would think of as integrative medicine. It is ways of helping people that are in addition to just conventional medicine.
And what you, I guess, you know, this is so different from making bottles.
Yes.
And I think we have to kind of go back and set the scene for what it is that you do, what your product is. And I will call it a product because it really is. I mean, you've basically done clinical trials.
Yes.
And you're dealing with people who are cancer survivors.
Yes.
And helping their healing.
Exactly.
And this is through a mind-body thing. Now, we all know, I think at this point, if you know, you get to a certain age, you know people who have survived cancer, and maybe you've survived cancer yourself, and you learn that this mind-body thing is very, very critical.
It is.
The state of mind that you go into it with, the condition that you're in, and your own body image, and then how you heal and what your state of mind is as you heal makes a difference. I mean, it's difference in hormones, difference in all sorts of things that are probably very subtle and very difficult to measure.
Very well said.
But what you've done is gotten into a whole other league that I didn't even think of? I mean, I would think of, say, yoga, meditation, nutrition, things like that. But what you're doing is envisioning.
Exactly. We teach people how to use their consciousness, which we talk about how people are constantly swimming in the imagery that they create day and night. And this has consequences, either good or bad, for your physiology, your biochemistry, even the ability of your immune cells to work at their optimal best level. And if we don't know this, it doesn't mean that it changes those consequences. But when you know, you can make informed choices and you can work with your consciousness and your own imagery to improve everything from your health behaviors to that actual physiology. Like,
so what would you do? Would you do like a counseling process?
It is definitely what you call a therapeutic intervention, but as opposed to just therapy, it is what we call behavioral medicine. It is that walking that edge, as you might think of it that way, where you are supporting conventional medicine, but it is still very much on that therapeutic side. And we teach people, there's 27 different techniques that we work with to help them first evaluate where they are, what their experience is, and help them to identify the symptoms that are left over, essentially, from the cancer treatments, and help them to reverse those symptoms. And the most common symptoms have to do, anyone who's had cancer or knows someone who's had cancer will talk about chemo brain. It definitely affects memory in many people, not all people, but in many people. And for a long time, this was something that was even denied. It was only in 2006 that the Institute of Medicine at that point had enough brain scans and research to say, well, the reality is we do know that these treatments does change the brain and it can affect memory. It also affects sleep rhythms, your ability to get a good night's sleep, which is critical to healing. It can make you very tired. And as you would suspect, anxiety, depression, stress, a diagnosis of cancer, my family has very much dealt with that. That certainly brings those emotional hits with it. And if I can tie this back to the idea of an industry that you were mentioning, I wrote grants and had grants funded for other universities and would then be very frustrated when I was teaching at universities to see that even when you got good outcomes, nothing, no product as you would think of it, no ability to offer it to the public was then forthcoming. And when I approached the National Cancer Institute and said, you know, I want to develop this program, I want to do research, but I want to, when I'm done, have some way to know that it's going to get to people. And that's when they introduced me to a program called SBIR, Small Business Innovation Research, which is where they fund specifically for that purpose. They fund small businesses and tell them, if you fill a need in the medical community that we have been unable to fill, and by the way, we'll only fund you if this product, as you think of it, is unique and it's filling a need that no one else has, then we will agree to fund you, and you have to agree and even provide for us evidence in advance that you have a way to get this to the public and keep this innovation alive once it's done. And so I took a leap of faith right off the cliff. At one point, I got my phase one monies first and began working with that. And then when we got really good outcomes from that, Steve, I actually resigned from my university positions and did this full time to see if we would get good outcomes. If we hadn't, it would have just been lost years.
Well, let me ask you this. I started out by saying, maybe we can have an imagination industry.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's actually kind of a rhetorical question because I think we have a growing imagination industry.
Yeah.
Simply, you know, the movie business is just one example, reality TV. Our writers are getting better. The whole way that the Native American expression is translated to wider audiences has undergone a total renaissance in the years I've been in Alaska. And all this is part of an imagination industry.
Yes.
And what you're doing is certainly involves imagination and would be nothing probably without imagination and imaging. But, you know, I'm wondering, can we have a healing industry in Alaska?
That's what this is intended to do. Exactly that. Because what people, when they understand and they can actually even see the science to the degree they want to, that demonstrates how their imagination can lead to healing, how it can support that and help your body to do its optimal best in getting completely well, they're amazed. I mean, when you hear that diagnosis, you have cancer. If you think about what your imagination does at that moment, and the fear and the fact that you sort of freeze. I mean, my family have been through this, as you and I have talked about. And essentially, you have to have an ability to step beyond that, to reach a point where you say, okay, maybe that's the reality of where we are, but I'm going to engage my imagination, my ability to think and problem solve, to come up with innovative ways to deal with this, and I'm going to move forward. And as soon as you even make that decision, we know, for example, that your natural killer cells may work better. Because stress and depression, and there's, you know, thousands of studies that look at this, it can impair your immune system. Well, that's not helpful when you're trying to heal from cancer. And I want to be clear, we're not saying your imagination will cure you of cancer, Steve.
Please.
What I'm saying is that we can teach you ways to optimize and give you the best opportunity for healing that you can have. You don't want to be stifling your natural healing abilities in the middle of this.
Well, yeah. When your colleague Carl Hild pitched this
yes.
idea to me, I was nervous, to say the least, because I don't want to have, you know, what snake oil peddlers coming on or new age, vaporous, whatever, cosmic muffins rolling around here inside of the studio. You know, it's just not the kind of show this is. But then he brought up clinical trials.
Mm-hmm.
You have a huge clinical trial on this now. This
yep.
thing works. Tell me about it.
Well, what we essentially did is that we tested the ability of people to alleviate their symptoms as compared to control groups. And as I mentioned, we worked hand in hand with the medical community here. And our research was vetted to the extreme by the National Cancer Institute before we were funded. It is based on very solid evidence. And in fact, most oncologists and surgeons in this town were more than happy to refer people to our study because they knew that their job was to do the best they could to get the cancer out of that person's body. But they also knew that even when the medicines and the surgeries were done, there was still a lot of healing that had to take place. And that's where we began to work together.
Thank you much. We're speaking with Dr. Lynn Freeman. She is the founder of Envision Behavioral Medicine Intervention. And we're talking about barriers to industrial development in Alaska. That's sort of a massive, massive subject. And that's why I wanted to get two extremely different panelists on the show. Our other panelist is Phil Schneider, founder of True North Plastics, who is making the bottles for Matanuska Creamery Milk in Palmer at a factory there. And David joins the program from Cordova. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, David. Hello,
good
David.
Good morning, Stephen. And
good morning.
Thank you for keeping Alaska's interests and our future first and foremost. I think what I'd really like to encourage again is a rebirth of Alaska Science and Technology grants, perhaps with the provision of keeping the results of it in state, either by a mechanism where some of the profit derives from an operation that ends up going outside, going back into the fund itself on a permanent basis. I mean, that's kind of financial wizardry stuff, but I think that's one of the reasons it possibly lost funding. But I mean, we're sitting on all this money, and we're not advancing ourselves to the future with it. And there were some wonderful things that came out of Alaska Science and Tech. So I guess that's it. I'd really like to see a rebirth of that. Thank you.
All right, David. Yeah, thank you so much for bringing that up. I think it fell victim to politics. You get one administration that doesn't want to keep anything, you know, doesn't want the previous administration to get credit for things. And I think it kind of fell victim to that. There was a little legislative log rolling going on as well, and trying to, you know, where would that money go? That endowment, we could use that on something else, and that sort of mentality. Yeah.
Steve, these issues, science and technology and manufacturing and growth of our economy are not unique. I mean, we're talking uniquely Alaskan, but it's interesting. This conversation parallels a national conversation that's
mm-hmm.
going on about how do we grow science and technology jobs in our country? How do we grow manufacturing? How do we build our economy back up to that great American economy? And I think it's interesting to look at those parallels from an Alaska perspective, remembering that, you know, politics do play into this, and we have a national political arena in which I think you're going to see more of this conversation occur.
I think you're right, Phil. And you know, I can also imagine that these type of discussions are taking place in the Chinese Politburo.
Yes.
And and where they, with the virtue of a planned economy, they can just say, make it so. And as you know, a five-year plan doesn't necessarily turn out the most efficient way of doing things. But nonetheless, they can command it. It can happen.
Right, right.
Well, if I can mention around the science and technology part, the funding of this research was science and technology based, because we weren't required just to come up with an intervention that would fill a unique medical need. We had to demonstrate how we could provide that to anyone anywhere in the country.
Well, tell me about that, because I tried to introduce this subject a little bit, talking about getting more broadband penetration and the idea that then distance and logistical problems that Phil's going to have with getting parts for his factory, you won't have.
I really won't. And it's funny, when I went forth to get funding and the first time, the feedback came back saying, well, it all looks good except your technology side, because we don't think you have internet in Alaska. How would you
manage? You're not even in the United States. How can you?
You know, and I essentially very nicely wrote back and said, well, no, if you pay attention to what Uncle Ted did here, I think we're pretty good. And ANTHC actually helped me, because we set up a test and we shot the ability to show that we could deliver this, and, you know, it didn't matter where, and sent that CD off, you know, and then it was like, oh, okay. So, but their requirement was that it had to be technology-based, too. So we had to come up with everything from being able to do what you call the telemedicine approach, where I would test me offering this intervention one-on-one in the normal live way you would think of it to some people, compared to another group where I would be, you know, a long ways away of streaming this, for example. And then we tested the live delivery against the technology delivery against a control group that got nothing. And the technology and the live did just as well.
Well, you do use a biofeedback technology, right?
Well, of course, and that's the biofeedback side. Many pieces here, Steve.
Yeah. I probably want to go back into that. But first, let's go to our caller from Valdez. Guy, welcome to Talk of Alaska.
Hello, Steve. Yeah, my question is for Bill. You know, Bill.
Phil.
You're making plastics and containers and stuff. With this pipeline, that they're proposing to build, you know, to send all of that natural gas down there, they're going to give away all of the stuff that's in that natural gas, and isn't a bunch of that stuff that they can make plastic with?
Yeah, you're correct. High-density polyethylene is a petroleum. It's actually a natural gas-based product with some petroleum aspects
and
as
so
well.
So if we end up building this pipeline and we send all of that stuff down there, that's a lot of money that the state's giving away. So don't you think, Bill, that maybe we should be able to grow an industry if we ended up making sure that we clean the natural gas out so that they only get the natural gas, and then that we could end up having a plastic industry?
Well, actually, just technologically, Guy, I think what happens, it actually condenses during the process with the temperature changes and everything, and you end up with these liquids anyway that then you're obviously going to make something out of. You have to.
Yeah, but they said that they're going to be sending all of that down. You know, we're not going to.
They'll just ship the liquids, too. Yeah.
Yeah. Comes down to the market size, which is another challenge that I think we all face up here as producers and manufacturers, is the market size. And that material goes down south because you have greater economies of scale and a greater market. But
we're closer to Asia than the rest of the United States is. And if we were to keep that, we could make stuff for the Chinese too, right?
Excellent point, and one of our growth models that
we've
been looking at.
It just doesn't seem
like
our politicians are looking out for us. They don't want us to have an industry. They want to seem to keep this the playground for BP and ConocoPhillips and the rest of those guys. And, you know, when they put that pipeline in, they made sure that they didn't build any big facilities here so that we could send out, you know, nothing but raw resource.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, I think about it, it actually took Neil Burke to even get a refinery down there in Valdez.
And what it makes is avgas.
Yeah. All right, Guy, I want to thank you. Thank you for your call.
Thank you, Steve. Good show.
A lot of stuff to think about there. I think, Phil, you probably are tracking with me a little bit on this, and that is, this is not that big of a diameter of pipeline, A, and B, They talked about this a whole lot when they were talking about the Wallahickel pipeline that would go to Valdez. I mean, essentially, right. That could easily support a petrochemical plant there.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, there was some. I wanted to jump back. Something the caller just reminded me of, as far as pipeline and science and technology. Promoting local business also from an environment. You know, there was a time before I think our economy started to tail, or that was the prevailing discussion in the news, where green jobs and supporting businesses that reduce a carbon footprint was on the table politically. There was a time not that far long ago where this was important. And, you know, again, just speaking personally from our perspective, we know we're saving 53 truckloads a year coming up that highway and all that carbon that goes off onto that beautiful landscape. And, you know, that's a small imprint, but maybe not to some people. 53 containers, quite a few. And also, there's a local recycler here, Ready Recycles, that spotlighted our business. And the reason why he did it is, you know, we're trying, even though you don't think of a plastic bottler as the greenest of job creators, you know, we're helping the local recycling industry, and we're actually trying to keep we're happy to have trucking and have transportation, but, you know, the less we need to transport up that highway and on those barges, I think the better off our local economy is. So I just wanted to kind of make that point in the vein of science and technology and thinking about our environment when you make decisions on what you buy in those box stores.
You know, one thing that occurs to me, because I followed the Science and Technology Foundation from when that was an idea that Steve Cooper and Henry Cole had until they did it, and then when they did their grants, and then they did the grants that follow the grants. And people always underestimate what's involved in getting anything done. They always underestimate. You say, "Oh, we didn't think of this. We didn't think of that." I mean, you can do a business plan, but then when you actually start doing the thing, it's not just that you run into problems. It's just that there's more stuff to be done before you finally get to the goal. And it seems like it's every time it's like that. Let's go to Jessica. Joins the program from Homer. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Jessica.
Yeah, hi. My name is Jess Penhoff, and I own with my husband Alaskan Yurt, and Nomad Shelter. In Homer, we manufacture yurts. And we started with Alaskan Science and Technology funding we started in 95, but in 98, 7 and 8, we got grants from the Alaska Science and Technology Foundation because we were located in Home. And at the time, there had been a study done by, I believe it was Stanford, that indicated that a good way to promote bush economies was to do small component manufacturers in the villages and consolidate products on the rail belt for export. And so we wrote a grant using our yurts as that kind of a model, where we made the wood products on the rails on the road system, and we did the fabrics and some of the more technical wood products in Nome, and then shipped them to a freight consolidator in Anchorage and for export to the customer. And We put 5 units through that model, and it finished successfully. But then what happened then was that when it came time to commercialize, Alaska Science and Technology was not willing to go that step. And so we had to privately commercialize. And it turned out that one of the stipulations in the grant, and they called it a grant, and was that it was repayable at 5% of growth. And so when you're starting up a business and you have to pay 5% gross income, that doesn't account for the years when you're just barely breaking even. And
yeah.
what happened to us is we went to banks and all kinds of people, Alaska Growth Capital, everybody, Division of Investments, everybody.
And you already had your product. You'd already proven your product.
We had proven our product, and we had, but there we had $200,000 on our balance sheet as a negative at startup. You know, it's like, give it up. There's nobody going to capitalize us. So, but the thing, what you said about not knowing what you're getting into, it's like raising a kid. You don't know what you're getting into when you start. And so we didn't know. All we knew is we have a product that we love, and we love to design it. We love to live in it. We love to make it happen. And so we knew nothing about business. So we decided to move to Homer and capitalize. And we thought, well, we'll just prove to them that we can do this, and then somebody will step up, right?
Yeah.
So that was incredible naivete, and we have been in Homer now since 2000, and we have built it up out of our home equity and our and you know, sweat equity, and we're still struggling. We still can't get capitalized for production runs, and we're still teetering on the edge, because unless we're running now our manufacturing business off of deposits, which is an incredibly inefficient and ridiculous way to manufacture. And we need operating capital, and there is absolutely no bank, no Alaska Growth Capital, no division of investments, nobody that will help us.
Actually, yeah,
we sunk all our equity into it.
You know, I want to thank you, Jessica, for that call, because that's just an amazing saga. And I think do you want to stay with us? Because I want to get Phil's thoughts on this, because I have a hunch that. You know, I think we can spin some ideas off of this one as Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from First National Bank Alaska, working shoulder to shoulder with Alaskan businesses for nearly a century. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender. How do you get men to wear their life jacket when the fact is that 90% of boating-related fatalities in Alaska are men? Well, truthfully, most men won't listen to messages like this, but they might listen to you. Have them fill out a Pledge to Live card and make a promise to wear their life jacket every time they get in a boat. Every time. Get a Pledge to Live card at pledgetolive.org. Make them promise so they make it back alive. This message sponsored by the Alaska Office of Boating Safety.
A lot of people want to chip in with their ideas on barriers to industrial development in Alaska. Our subject on Talk of Alaska today, we've talked about a healing industry, we've talked about manufacturing industry, and our telephone number is 1-800-478-8255, 478-TALK, a local call in Anchorage at 550-8422. Email is talk@aprn.org, but I gotta boot up my email because I can't look at it right now. But I'm sure somebody will come in here and make it so. We were talking with Jessica in Homer about their yurt business and what they had, the way that they have to capitalize their business, which is essentially got down to the cash only business model, because they can't get anybody to invest in this. And I think the first thing you find out, people think, oh, I'll just get venture capital and good to go, but it doesn't work like that, because they want huge return on venture capital, right?
Right.
Yeah.
We found that it was just the high tech industries that were getting funded when we were going after funding, and it anything value added, you know, that involved, like, we don't have huge profit margins, but we put a lot of people to work, and so that wasn't very appealing to. And one thing that really bothered me, I'll have to tell you, is that we had multiple chances in the last 3 years to export our yurts. And I contacted ADA because there's supposed to be a fund there for promoting exporting. And I actually had a loan officer say to me that Alaska doesn't export. He didn't even know how to do it. He didn't know how to go about getting the application in because it hadn't been done. And
wait,
I said, well,
that reminds me so much of what the lady said to me over 24-hour dry cleaning. She said, "It's just the name, honey. You'll have it next week." Industrial export. Industrial development export. It's in the name. Oh, that's totally outrageous. You know, I'm thinking maybe we need to do something like North Dakota has done, which is to allow state chartered financial institutions that don't have anything to do with the financial system outside of the state, and they just work within the state, and they figure out what the good risks are, and it's like your old fashioned the building and loan situation. For some reason, that's going out of style. You can't earn return. You can't put money in a savings account and earn money or earn interest on it anymore. What's up with that? I mean, they're loaning the money out. The people are paying the money back, but somehow you can't get in on that action. Something's gone terribly wrong with all this. Well, anyway, Phil Schneider at True North Plastics, I want to get your thoughts on this predicament that Jessica's in Homer there. They've got a business. They got a going business. It could grow, but it can't really grow all that fast because they can't get the investment capital.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's probably typical of a lot of startup, very passionately run businesses. And my heart goes out to Jessica, and not only because we love Homer and do a little business down there, but you've got a great product and a lot of passion for it. And I would say, you mentioned ADA, and there's another organization, the Alaska Manufacturing Extension Partnership, a couple of state-run agencies that I think are doing their best to try to support manufacturing. If you believe that the government can serve that role as well as the banks and the private sector, then you go that route. But in our cases, we try to just rely on our own hardworking Alaskan ingenuity and a bit from locally run banks. And that's how we've been able to try to make a successful run in manufacturing and some other businesses.
And I guess your banker already knew you because you've already successfully run businesses.
Yeah, that helped. And again, our local banks, and if you look at what happened in the housing forecast, and Alaska fared well because you had some smart local bankers up here. And again, I relied on them when looking at capital. So that's about all I could add to that conversation. I hope your business goes well, though, because we really like your product and think your passion and what you're doing is great down there.
Well, thank you so much. Yeah, we're not ready to give it up, that's for sure. We're competing against a company whose state bought 200 yurts from them and put them in their state park, Pacific Yurts in Oregon, and they get their rafters and ladders made in the prison system. And so they run full page ads in Alaska Magazine, and our state has never bought a yurt from us, has only bought Pacific Yurts, and sells us a permit to put state park yurts up in Kachemak Bay State Park.
Wow, this is getting to be an expose, almost like when we start talking about Full Circle Farms. pretty soon the cuss words are coming out. Hey, thank you, Jessica. Stay right on. I want to let you continue it. I want to get Lynn Freeman of a Vision Behavioral Medicine Intervention involved in this conversation because you've actually done both. I mean, you've actually taken your day job and throwing all your savings into your business, but then you did get financing.
Well, in a way, and here's how you think about that, and I come back to the Small Business Innovation Research. The first 4 years that we were doing research and developing this, I had a full-time job that paid the bills because I knew this was going to be a long haul for us to get there. When it became to phase two, where it was going to be full-time and there was no option, that's when the risk began. And we had funding from the National Cancer Institute that essentially covered most of the expenses during that period of time when we were doing phase two. But I also knew that when those funds ran out, I better be hitting the ground running. And I had to know that not only could I get this to the public, but we could continue to grow and to make this a viable thing in Alaska. Because this is the only program of its kind that's been clinically tested, and it's been tested by Alaskans and also people in Washington State, but here, when we get ready to grow this up as we're going now, where do you think I'm going to take the people from and employ them to help me deliver this? I'm actually already working with my friend Carl Hild at Alaska Pacific University to look at taking graduates that are newly graduates ready to go, who have this psychological background and also some physiological interest there. And we teach them this particular approach so that now they can come and help me deliver this to people anywhere across the country. We're going to serve Alaska first, and then as we go up, we're going to be able, because of the World Wide Web, let's face it, the telemedicine approach, we are not limited by space and time and how we can do this. And I fully intend to keep this here and keep Alaskans learning this and both receiving it and helping me to deliver it.
Yeah.
So it's an easier bar to jump if you're going to use that technology as opposed to trying to get, you know, components to come to you. And I was fortunate. My husband, as I mentioned to you before, I think, he essentially is very interested and very capable in the technology side and helped me develop and think about how to get this out there and make sure it met all the criteria for HIPAA compliance to how it would deliver this. Alaskans are very tech smart. I mean, any bush country, you know, any area community I go into, they've got their webcams. They are hooked up. They know how to do this. So that means that we can get what they need to them no matter where. And that means that we are not limited in the ways that many other industries are. We need to be doing more of that in Alaska. We have to be innovative. We don't have a choice. So I think that we're well stationed as far as the technology side to really deliver things and hold them here in a way that both benefits our state and allows us to employ people.
Jessica and Homer, still have you on there with your predicament.
That's right.
How is business?
How is business?
Yeah.
Well, it's really amazing how we follow the national models. It's crazy, you know, little tiny yurt business, but when they say that it's slowing down, it slows down for us, and when it picks up for us. Right now, we're holding our own. We're still producing yurts, you know, we probably won't hit break even till the end of August, you know, and so, you know, and we are off of deposits, so it's scary, you know. it's a scary business to be in, actually, because we operate a lot on confidence in our product and our history, and okay, it worked last year, and, you know, okay, we can keep on it, and the fact that our employees are all really committed, and they like to do what they do, and they make sacrifices for us, and they're wonderful people that are helping us. So, you know, so we're still hanging on, and we could use a multiple order.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm just wondering, you know, I have a feeling if I called up whoever it is that does the buying for the state, you know, that they give me some explanation about competitive bidding and so forth. I said, sorry, they tried, but this met our criteria.
They've never put it out to us for bid. We've never been able to even bid on anything. They've bought yurts, I think, out of the budgets that come under the bidding amount or something.
Yeah. See, this is what we get is what we discover when you really look into it is that a lot of what we do in Alaska has been grafted together from outside, and we say we don't care about how they do it outside, but actually almost everything we do, we've taken the pattern from some other place, and sometimes it doesn't work at all, but you know, you can't tell that to the people that are in charge because they just want a smooth operation, and if you're experimenting, you're not going to get a smooth operation. Jessica, I want to thank you for your call.
Well, thank you. Thanks for hearing me out. I appreciate that.
Well, this is what this show is for, is people to sing the blues. And I haven't even let Phil Schneider start in here. Tell me a little bit about some of the challenges that you face with your plastics plant there.
Well, Steve, I can just, you know, just to piggyback on the last caller, and I think there's a perception out there, oh, you get a government contract or get there's a cash cow involved and get that military contract or, you know, get that state contract. And, you know, I was just on the phone with one of our customers yesterday who sells water to the federal government, to the bases. And without getting into too much detail, he's about $9,000 annually out on testing his product before he even sells 1 gallon. So, you know, that's just one unique challenge in terms of permitting and getting through sort of some of the governmental red tape that I know one of our customers goes through, which, of course, in a supply line business like ours, falls back to us and the label and, you know, there are a number of factors there. On the our greatest challenge in terms of distance and trying to provide a product to Alaska, there are a couple. One, definitely transportation. And we've got great relationships with the transportation companies, and we appreciate them. And but the reality of a fuel surcharge affects all of us, and it comes down to what you buy in the store. And so transportation and the distance is one. Secondly, and it's sort of along those lines, for example, we've got some fairly unique equipment out here, and we do offer tours from time to time. If anybody's interested, they can, you know, check us out. And
wow, yeah, you have a website.
We'll refer
people to the website if they want to.
Yep. And it's just an interesting process, and you don't have a lot of heavy manufacturing here, so it's you know, interesting to come and see. But regardless, so you have a lot of unique parts and pieces on here, say PLCs and different types of cords and valves, and I've spent $125 on a cord to have one machine talk to another because I had to have it the next day. You know, things like that come up. It drops your bottom line when you're talking about a container full of milk or a container full of water or a container full of windshield wiper fluid. You know, it changes your bottom line when, again, you know, you're competing against large conglomerates that can produce mass amounts of material and ship it up at a flat rate. Again, I am not one to sing the blues too much. I feel blessed and glad to be doing business in Alaska and in Palmer, Alaska specifically, in the valley and working in Anchorage and around Alaskans. I think it's a great place to do business. I think it creates unique challenges, but hey, our history was based on unique challenge. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's that stick-to-itiveness that I think characterizes Alaskan business people, and that's really why I wanted to come on the show, was just support, you know, our vendors and our customers, and really tout that all Alaskan manufacturing and business moving forward. I give my hat off to Lynn and, you know, the caller from Homer as well. I mean, I know how hard it is. To pinpoint it to one thing, I guess I'd say our distance and our transportation woes, but it is a pleasure to do business here. I'll say that.
Well, you know, let me ask you this. We buy Matanuska Creamery milk ever since we got religion. We love the cheddar, by the way. The cheddar that they're making, love it.
Yeah,
it's great. But
it's hard to fit it into a jug, though. No, I'm kidding.
Well, the thing is, like, we didn't even know, because of the way the labeling is, we didn't even know what those yellow jugs were. And then and they said, "Oh yeah, that's Matanuska Creamery." What do we mean? I know Matanuska Creamery. Oh, okay, yeah, that's right. They did manage to keep some of the dairy business alive, and here's the milk. And then we just go, we don't use that much milk, and so we really like that half gallon bottle that they had. Mm-hmm. But then they disappeared for a while. Did you have a parts problem or something for a while?
Actually, it's an interesting question that you raise. We just until recently, we had not been providing the creamery with half gallons. They were actually shipping those up. And they were doing that because, again, it comes back to volume and how much are you actually selling. And there's a retooling cost that goes into creating a different size container, which we've since solved. But no, the lack of half gallons that you see in the stores doesn't have anything to do with our manufacturing plant. It has more to do with the retailers.
I got you.
And them buying cardboard, which is not recyclable from what I understand or what I can see, and selling more cardboard containers that are, again, shipped up for 5 days and sloshed around, and then selling them back to the consumer versus a locally made recyclable plastic container. And so we're ready and poised to sell them half gallons and the creameries and the water and companies. But no, it didn't have to do with the supply of our product.
All right, Phil. Thank you so much. Phil Schneider of True North Plastics as Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from
the Pebble Partnership, developing a comprehensive mine plan that meets Alaska's regulatory requirements while supporting sustainable fisheries in Southwest Alaska. PebblePartnership.com.
And by ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company.
Email is talk@alaskapublic.org. This in from Bradley. Everyone who talks about bringing new industries to Alaska always defaults to talking about manufacturing, it seems. What about technology industries. Anchorage and the Valley are great places to live and raise a family, so why not try to lure software engineers up here or server farms to make use of passive cooling in our cold climate and help offset the cost of expanding the high-speed internet infrastructure up here? That from Bradley. And by golly, that's being talked about, and I think that's going to happen. Let's go to Tom, joins the program from Homer. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Tom.
Yeah, thank you, Steve. I'd like to see, follow up a little more on the science and tech grants. I'd like to see the high school kids involved in developing plans for making alcohol. And also revising.
You're not talking bootlegging, though, right?
No, to burn it.
Oh, okay.
And also to make vehicles that would get good mileage.
So is the biofuel, and what would be the feedstock?
Well, is there any number of things? It could be grass, for example, or cattails, or brush.
And you know the hurdle to that, right? That they haven't found the right enzymes yet to break down the cellulose. You understand that, right?
I don't think that's true. There's a book out by, it's called Alcohol Can Be a Gas by David Bloom. And if you study that book, I think that technology is here.
Okay, I don't know. That's that'll be news to Dr. Chu. Hey, I want to thank you and move on to a bunch of other subjects, but I appreciate that call, Tom.
Okay, thank you.
It is Talk of Alaska, and Joan chimes in by email. Hey, Steve, just want to remind listeners about two great funding opportunities, Bristol Bay Marketplace and Alaska Marketplace, www.bristolbaymarketplace.com. Joan, actually, I think you're on the phone, right?
I am. I got a minute between diaper changes for my kids here. I just wanted to call and say, you know, I think, you know, one of the great things about Alaskans is we have so many good ideas, and just wanted to remind listeners that we actually have two current funding opportunities that are great chances for folks that have some ideas. We have Alaska Growth Capital is sponsoring a business ideas competition, entrepreneurship competition for the Bristol Bay region specifically. Cash awards of up to $50,000. Our deadline is September 2nd, and our website is bristolbaymarketplace.com. And also want to remind people that if they've got a great idea statewide, there's AFN's Alaska Marketplace. And if you're in the Bristol Bay region, you know, apply for both, and we can really get the economy moving in Southwest Alaska.
Wow. And you're at Alaska Growth?
I am doing some, I'm helping them out, supporting them a little bit right now. Again, when I'm not changing diapers for my two boys.
Yeah. I think that's an amazing outfit, Alaska Growth Capital.
Right, and I know we've had some of your panelists this morning have talked about some of their, and get our listeners have talked about some of the funding opportunities they've done in the past, and you know, this is a new project for Bristol Bay Marketplace, and you know, we're really happy to support it, and it's a business ideas competition.
All right, thank you very much, Joan from Alaska Growth Capital. Richard joins the program from Fairbanks. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Richard.
Thank you, Steve. Two quick questions for Phil and one broad thought question. The first is, with the plastics, what pressure can it be beefed up to carry, to hold? I am thinking about using the plastic to build a pipeline. I know they carry water and sewage sometimes. Is that at all feasible? What's the highest pressure he could put it on steroids?
You're accurate in that it is used. If you're familiar with what a culvert is, they make high-density polyethylene is used to make all kinds of piping. And so and different compounds, different mixtures of plastic can actually withstand greater pressures. You know, all I can tell you is it'll hold milk if you drop it off the shelf. Other than that, you know, we'd have to probably get into a pretty in-depth conversation or get you in touch with people that deal in different types and styles of plastics and get to know a little bit more about what your specific application is.
I'd be happy to call you later on that, and I am in over my head on that. It might be dreaming, but I'd love to talk to you and get it out of dreaming. Now, number two, the big overview question. The whole economics of what is unfortunately named the resource curse, that economies tend to stagnate when you find oil. One of the resource industries that we've really failed in is social science. I know that as a lapsed social scientist who fell into journalism. I think journalism is the highest calling. I do not think my previous calling was. But if we look at the Norwegian Resource Fund, and it's interesting because the North Sea is the one supergiant field that is in our time frame, they're about 10 times the size of our permanent fund, and they use it to fund health and other issues.
Yeah, and probably sooner or later Alaska comes around to that, Richard. Hey, thanks for your call, Richard. I'm going to go ahead and cut off, and sounds like there's some crosstalk happening on the line there. Lynn, you kind of come out of the social sciences, don't you?
Well, yes. As I mentioned, my background was in psychology. I also had my master's in human sciences, which is the study of consciousness, all of those things to innovation, the ability to heal. All of those things come into play. And you learn from looking at the research that the more people use their innovative tendencies, their creativity, that sort of sparks this jolt of happiness in them, and it really gets the brain waves flowing, so to speak, then that's when they can not only feel better and actually heal better, they can become more innovative in how to deal with whatever the issues in their life are.
We got about a minute, a little more than that left. Mary in Anchorage, welcome to Talk of Alaska. You're going to get the last word, Mary.
Good morning. Thank you very much. I would like to talk to the psychologist.
Okay, go ahead.
When it comes to cancer and how we beat cancer, from a native standpoint of science, it takes positivity. And also the native people's science is more sensible than the Western science is, because the Western science only takes in and credits somebody else's research, whether it's right or wrong, and for the most part it can't be wrong. But if the two would meet together, you would get the truer science of things.
Actually,
and you work for a university and you have students. What you could do is send out your students to the villages and see how the people operate in their philosophy, in their holistic approach of things.
Mary, that's a beautiful way to close the program there. Lynn, you walk that line a bit, don't you?
Actually, we have traditional healers who are very much involved in helping us to design this intervention, and I have actually worked with research with traditional healings in Bush, Alaska, so I very much support what you say, and this program incorporates all of that, Mary.
Phil Schneider, I want to thank you for being on the show from Palmer.
Thank you.
All right. Next week on Talk of Alaska, we're going to deal with a bunch of people that are in Alaska right now with yurts. That's right. Plus a circus parade. I'm not kidding. Heather Arono and Dave Waldron and Josh Edge, the crew today. I'm Steve Heimel. Thanks for listening.
Talk of Alaska is made possible by this member station of the Alaska Public Radio Network, by BP, supporting public broadcasting in Alaska. This program is a production of APRN, which is solely responsible for its content. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies are available by calling 550-8400.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.